The Kevin Smith Show, unique in the galaxy.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the very first time tonight. Welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here, and I hope you make a habit out of it. It's a good habit to get into, one that if you have not yet acquired, you certainly should try very, very, very urgently to acquire the habit. And all you have to do to acquire the habit is just keep coming back night after night. Couple of quick announcements. Tonight is K-Files night. That's our free weekly newsletter. It's a K-Files e-zine. It comes to your email inbox. If you haven't subscribed, be sure you do. It's absolutely free. And you can subscribe by going over to kevinsmithshow.com, my website. And you'll see in red letters, K-Files e-zine. You just click on that and subscribe. It's really that simple. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. Got a flash message last night, and whereas it came, it's a flash message, but it came from here inside the United States. We don't read those on the air. And we have telephone numbers for that. You can call the telephone number, and we'll put that put you on the air, and you can talk. But this guy wanted me to see this, even though I wasn't going to read it on the air. And it came not only from the United States, but right here in the Phoenix area. I guess probably all of you have heard of Phoenix, Arizona. Well, one of the suburbs that you probably have also heard about is Scottsdale, Arizona. And this, I won't read all of this. I'll put it in the K-Files e-zine, though. But I am going to sort of paraphrase it for you because I want you to know about it. He came out of outside of his workplace on Frank Lloyd Wright at Scottsdale Road. Frank Lloyd Wright, I think it's Boulevard, at Scottsdale Road. At about 7:35 p.m. yesterday evening, and he saw in the sky a stationary object about twice as bright as the brightest star, our planet, and it had no distinct shape or anything. He said he stood there for a few minutes, and two of his co-workers came out who were also looking at it, and he said, I asked them if they could also see it, and they said yes. They confirmed that they saw it. About 10 minutes later, he had gone back in the building, and then now it's about 10 minutes later, and he's headed home and driving south on Highway 101, and this object is still in the sky for 15 to 20 minutes. And then he lost sight of it because of the trees and buildings as he approached home. He called a friend of his in Las Vegas to see if that friend could also see it, trying to see if, you know, is this a star, is this a planet? And the friend said no. And then he tried to take a picture of it with his cell phone, but it didn't turn out. But he said, a few minutes after he got home, three or four other lights of airplanes and or helicopters at various distances began circling that area. So there you have up-to-the-date high strangeness still happening in the skies around Phoenix, Arizona. My guests this evening are Tim Beckley and Johnny Sands, an amazing story of a UFO ET encounter. We'll be back right after this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guests that I will welcome on air here in just a second, Tim Beckley and Johnny Sands. Tim Beckley has been with us before, and I know that all of you who listen to the show regularly are familiar with him. But for those who are brand new listeners, Tim Beckley is a well-known UFO investigator, author, publisher, and public speaker. Johnny Sands is a country musician, an actor, an author, and a UFO, I guess we could say, experiencer, contactee. He's had an encounter, pretty amazing encounter with a UFO, and we're going to be talking about all of that this evening. So, gentlemen, let me welcome you. Well, we lost them. I don't know what happened, but I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll just put... Okay, let's see. Got you. Okay, let's see. I don't know what has happened, gentlemen. They're still on the line, but our phone system has been acting up, and so we're not hearing them. But let me just play some music for a few seconds, and we'll rig up the backup system here. If you'll just. Give us a few seconds, folks. We will do that, okay? Let's see. There we go. A little music. We'll be live in a second.
All. Become a member of the Kevin Smith Show.
It's going to play all of the break. Okay, there we go. Well, live radio sometimes is interesting for a lot of reasons, and one of them is sometimes the equipment goes on strike. But let's see if we now have these guys with us. All right, gentlemen, if you can just say hello, we'll give it a try. All right. Okay. Well, apparently it's decided it's just not going to work. Yeah. Well, yeah, folks. Let me tell you what the deal is. We can hear them. I can hear them, but they cannot hear me. All right. Well, they can hear me, but I mean you can't hear them. I think is the deal. Gentlemen, I don't know what we're going to do about this. All right, let's just play a song. We'll go to a blank screen, just a graphic screen, and I will cast the demons out of the radio equipment. All right, we'll do that. Okay, well, what we've done is a little exorcism on the equipment here. It's been a very, very long time since we've had something like that happen. But, you know, that's what happens when you're dealing with live radio once in a while. You get gremlins in the system. And but let's see if the system's working. So let's bring these guys online and let me... do we have Tim Beckley online?
Kevin, I'm right here.
Okay, and I notice we've got a little whistling going on there, and we'll take care of that. And what about Johnny Sands? Do we have you on? Hello, Johnny. Well, I don't know what has happened to Johnny. He was with us, was he not, Tim?
I'm not yet. Well, you know, I hear him.
You hear him.
Yes. I'll pass. Hey, this is the way talk radio started. You only heard one side of the conversation.
We never have this problem. This is just weird.
Well, you know, it ties in with the Men in Black. This is how I hadn't talked to Johnny since 1976 when his original experience happened. And the UFO hunters wanted to do a show on the Men in Black, and they called me because they knew I had taken this photograph back in the 60s, and I suggested that they have Johnny on because I remember his encounter with the MIBs.
Okay. Well, Johnny, why don't you try saying something to us? We'll just test this out, Johnny.
Hey, I'm right here.
All right. Well, I think we figured this out. Okay. Very good. I don't think it's Men in Black. I think it's the man in the hat here on the screen. By the way, I got a message from someone who said, what's the deal with that hat you wear? You said it's because you're cold, but how can just wearing a hat keep you warm? You see, the studio is quite cold, and I'm in short sleeves. And if you don't know that 25% of your body heat exits through your head, you need to go read some books on survival. And you cover your head up, you warm up. So that's the deal. Okay, well, hey, the gang's all here. So we can do this thing, and we'll try to do it with the minimum of difficulties here.
Good.
Okay, so it looks like we're good to go here. What an exciting, different kind of a start to a show. Okay, Tim Beckley has been with us, We have talked with him about his work in UFO investigation and writing and so forth. When I asked him to come back on the show, he not only agreed, but he said, hey, you know, there's someone that we ought to have on the show right along with me that really has an incredible story. And that is Johnny Sands. Johnny Sands is a country music singer, songwriter, author. But Johnny encountered something back in 1976 that probably sets him apart from most people in the country music business. Not from all of them, but from most. And that was an encounter with something not from this planet. So why don't we start with you, Johnny, and why don't you share with us about what it is that you encountered?
Yes, I'll be glad to. Thank you for having me on the show, Kevin. It's a real honor. I've been in the music business as a stuntman for motion pictures for many years. But I was promoting a record out of Nashville, Tennessee, back in 1976. And my tour invited me to come to Nashville, Tennessee, to Las Vegas, to be at the Sahara Hotel. And so I went out to Vegas, and I used to work in Vegas at a place called the Old Nevada, which was a Wild West town. And being a stuntman, I had spent a lot of time out there. And so I decided that evening I'd ride out and take a look at that old facility and see if it was still in existence. Somehow I got confused up and kind of lost track of time. And I realized I was out of town, but I was way out of town, and I was on a road called the Blue Diamond Highway. About 14 or 15 miles out of the city of Las Vegas, I realized where I was at was on the wrong road. I turned the car around, and as I turned the car around, I could see...
Oh, we just lost you. Tim, are you there?
I am.
Okay, there's your audio. You just came back in, Johnny.
Okay.
You turned the car around and you could see what?
I could see something like a long cigar-shaped blimp in the sky. It had blinking lights all around it, and it was kind of orange-colored from the light blinking on it. It looked to be orange-colored. And I thought at first it was a blimp, but it was too big to be a blimp. It looked to be maybe 60, 70 foot long. But at the same time, my car began to malfunction, and so I immediately pulled to the side of the road and got out of the car. It had quit running completely. I opened the gas tank and took the cap off, and I began to shake the car so I could listen to see if I could hear gas, because I thought the first thing was I've run out of gas. Mm-hmm. But I could hear gas. And then I immediately went to the front of the car and raised the hood. As I raised the hood, I could see the blimp-shaped object in the sky. And as I seen it, a flash of light came down to the ground in front of my car. And I turned to look to see what it was. And as I looked, I could see two figures. It looked like two men, and they were standing where the beam of light had hit. They began to walk toward me. Well, immediately, like anybody would do, I wanted to get out of there. I couldn't seem to get my body to function. It was like I was in a state of loss of being able to control my own body. And I could think. I knew I needed to get out of there, but I couldn't move. And at the same time, they continued to walk toward me. As they got closer to me, my headlights were still shining. I could see. It was two figures. They were both pale-looking figures, approximately 5'7", 5'8". They were very muscular-looking bodies. However, they were bald-headed, had no hair, no eyebrows was on their face. They had no ears. They had wide noses, but they had something looked like a fish gill on each side of their neck. They came right up to me. One stepped in front of the other one, And then he began to speak. When he spoke, I realized he wasn't talking from his mouth. It looked like he was talking to me from an intercom on his belt. It was sound like a long-distance phone call, but he was right there in front of me, yet his mouth wasn't moving. As he was talking, he reached around behind him, and he pulled out a ball, which is about as big around as a baseball, and it was silver. And as he held it out, it got to the size of a basketball. And as it got to the size of a basketball, he let it go. And as he let it go, it began to rotate in a slow movement around like the earth going around in a circle. And when he got that in front of me, he reached over top of it with his fingers, and like firecrackers went off on top of that. And as it went off, he looked at me, and he said, through this mental telepathy is what they later explained it to be, that says when we set off nuclear devices on our planet, it causes a destruction in our solar system and in the galaxies. And said not only to that, but it causes destruction to us here on our planet. And he said these things are causing difficulties, and that's why we're here. And so I'm asking, the first question that I've got is, where are you from? And he just pointed up. He never said. And I went on to talk with him. Now, I'm about to tell you some things that they said to me that I never said 34 years ago, because they said what we had to say to you, we are only saying to you at this time. At a later time, we'll talk to you again. But these are some of the things that they said to me that I never said. And I talked to Tim Beckley here, which is on the phone. Back then, 34 years ago, he was working with the Globe magazines at the time. And I was really confused with this thing, so I wanted somebody to know something about it. And I asked them if they were military. And their answer was no. But your leaders know of our existence. And I asked them, how old are you? Because they had a wrinkle in their mouth like they had no teeth inside. And they said, we are before the beginning of what you call time. And then I asked them if they meant us any harm. And he said, harm only comes from evil. And then I finally...
Johnny, we have to take a break. We used up a good portion of our time exorcising our equipment of its demons. So we have to take a break, and when we come back, we'll pick up right there, okay? Hang on. All right, folks, we're off the porch and running with the big dogs, and we'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guests this evening are Tim Beckley and Johnny Sands. Johnny, when we went away for break, I had to cut you off in mid-sentence, but you had just begun to tell us, you said that these guys said to you, your leaders know of our existence, and you asked them how old they are, and they said that they are from before what we call the beginning of time. And let's pick up there and move forward.
Okay. You know, that's the part that bothered me there. I didn't quite understand what they meant before the beginning of time. I asked him if it meant us any harm, and he said that harm only comes from evil. And then I asked him, why in the world would you ask me or pick me for these kind of questions? You know, I'm out here. I don't even know what are you real. I don't know what this is that's going on. And he says, you will know in what you call time. He brushed me across the shoulder and says, we have to go, but we or some like us will see you again real soon.
We or some like us will see you again.
Real soon.
Real soon.
And that's the part that kind of, see, at the time, I didn't know what I was seeing a movie set. I didn't know what was going on. I knew that thing in the sky was absolutely real. I mean, I wasn't smoking anything, drinking anything. I wasn't under any kind of influence of anything. Scared, yes. And I've been a stuntman. I've crashed through walls of fire, hung into helicopters. I've done all kinds of things. But this had a fear in me because it didn't look like no movie no more. It looked like a reality. And when he brushed me across the shoulder, it was like my body had been just paralyzed. And I began to feel my body again, and I realized my body would move, and it began to move in a slow movement, but I began to get myself back to reality. And as I did, they were walking off from me, and I reached and grabbed the hood and slammed it. And rather than thinking about them, I run around to the car, jumped in the car to try to start it, and it started. And as it started, that flash of light from the craft that was in the sky hit right down where they were standing, and poof, they were gone. And then I looked up at the craft in the sky, and less than 5 seconds, I'm talking about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that sucker went from me plumb out of sight. It just left this earth. And I immediately sped that car back looking for some civilization. I was looking for them city lights in Las Vegas. When I got there, I still didn't know what I'd done or what I'd seen, but I called the police department immediately because I wanted somebody to tell me something, that they had seen something. I hoped somebody could help me relate to the situation that I'd just been in. And the police department told me, you need to call the Nellis Air Force Base. And they gave me a number to call. And so I immediately called that. And they said that they used to be in charge of what they called the Blue Book, which I didn't know what that meant. But they said, listen, what you say in there is we know that you're probably telling the truth at this time. And they says because there's been several sightings tonight, not only here in Nevada, but also in New Mexico and over Arizona. And they said you need to talk to the Earl Phenomenal Research Center out of Tucson, Arizona, and we're going to give you a number. So they gave me the number. Well, you know, I'm a little confused, and I'm also, I feel like I'm in a state of shock. I'm out there for one thing, and I'm here for another now. And so I went to the hospital, and I actually went to the emergency room, told them I'd had a real trauma, explained to them what was going on. They asked me, was I smoking anything or drinking anything or taking anything? I said, no, I'm not. And they said, we'd like to run some tests. So they admitted me right immediately. And they run all these tests on me, and they said, you seem to be all right. You seem to be real hyped up. It seems like a lot on your nervous system. And we're going to keep you overnight just to see that you're going to be all right. So, and while I was in the bed, I called from the room that number to the Earl Phenomenal Research Center, and I explained to them what had happened to me. I was in the hospital trying to check out what was wrong with me, and they said they had a man called, his name was John Romero, and they said he's the head of the Sahara Hotel. I said, well, that's where I'm working at. They said, well, he's the head man, but he's also an investigator for the UFO network for us in the state of Nevada, so I'll have him contact you. Okay, so I contacted John Romero from the hospital. I called Sahara myself, and I wanted to get to the bottom of this because I really wanted to get it over with. I wanted somebody to tell me it was an hallucination. It wasn't real. When I contacted him, he was very excited to talk to me. He said, when you get out of the hospital, come and see me immediately. So the next morning, they released me. I contacted him again. And I went to the Sahara Hotel. When I got to the Sahara Hotel, John took me in his office and explained to me what his job was and what it was to investigate. And he said, we got some tests we'd like you to take. He said, we have an expert FBI investigator, and he's a polygraph examiner. We'd like you to take a test if you'd be willing. And I said, I'd be more than willing just to get this straightened out, maybe to tell me something I don't even know. And he says, we have another man that does a voice analysis, and we'd like him to be on hand at that same time, and then one other fellow is Dr. Leo Sprinkle from the University of Wyoming. He is a hypnotist and a special psychologist in the field of investigations of people with paraphernalia experiences. So I says, well, that'll be fine. Whatever you want to do, let's do it. So anyway, they set that up. I went to those meetings, and when I got to, they asked me several questions, but they asked me, one of the questions was, did you see two strange figures in the desert 14 miles or 15 miles out on the Blue Diamond Highway? And I said, yes, I did. And he says, did those strange figures come up to you? And I said, yes, I did. He said, was you froze and not able to move? And I said, yes, I was. And he said, here's the question that's going to stump you up, big boy. He said, did they talk to you but not use their mouth? I said, yes, sir, they did. The polygraph examiner was so excited at that time, he jumped up out of the chair. They had a glass window where the other people was behind. And he said, this guy's telling the real truth. And then he went on with the rest of the exam, and he gave me 100% on it. Dr. Leo Sprinkle gave me 100%, and the voice analysis gave me 100%. Well, it satisfied me because I was sane, and I realized, hey, this ain't hallucinations, this is for real. So John Romero took me back to the Sahara Hotel, and he said, we'd like to do an artist conception of the character that you seen of these two characters in the desert that night. And so we sat down with an artist that he picked especially for this. And it was me, and I took a man with me, was a 17-year police officer in Philadelphia. He was a special investigator, and he was also a sparring partner with Leon Spinks out in Vegas there. And he was a real big, bulky man that had a lot of fighting experience, and I took him with me. I said, he's going to be my bodyguard. And so we went to the Sahara. I sat down in a chair with the artist, and I began to explain this character. And as I began to get him visualized, we got down to the nose and to the gills on the side of the face. As we got to that point, two men approached us, one in sunglasses, a black hat, and a black suit. The other in a black suit, no sunglasses, stood over to the where we were standing. And the artist asked me, says, why does these guys have a nose and gills? I says, I don't really know about that. I don't know what them gills are. And this one guy without the glasses on leaned over in front of me. He kind of wobbled a little bit like he was a little, almost robotic, but he wasn't. He looked like a Caucasian-looking fellow. Black suit, looked a little off for the black suit. I mean, not up to date. And he says, let me explain that to you. He said, you see, they are from probably a planet that's in the area of Sirius, which is a star that is 8.5 light years from here. And he said, in that planet system, he said, there is a planet that is known to be half Aquarius. He said, which would be half time underwater and half time on land. And he said, so the gills would answer to why they would spend so much time underwater, simply because the fact of the heat the factor that revolved around Sirius planet because it was so close to the sun, I guess. And at the time, I don't even know what he's talking about because I don't know nothing about astronomy. I don't know nothing about that. So the artist liked it anyway, and the artist said, it sounds good to me. And he said, then the other part of the time, they'd live on land like a frog gets in and out of water. So then he patted me on the shoulder, this man did, and he says, we've got to go now, but we will see you again real soon. Well, when he said that, I'd already told this to this policeman, and he looked at me and punched me as they walked off. He said, they just said to you what them aliens said to you. And I said, yeah, I know. And it was a security guard standing there, so I told his security, I said, would you follow them, please? Now, look, we're talking about the Sahara Hotel. The lobbies and the hallways is usually jam-packed because they got the casino and the showcases going on of the stage artists. But here's a blank hallway with nobody but the people I just described to you. And they begin to walk off, these two men down this hallway. And as they begin to walk, the security guard went right behind them, maybe 15 feet behind them. And as they pushed the door open and opened it up to go out, he caught it before it even closed. And he stepped out onto the porchway. And I seen him looking both ways because I turned around to see what was going on, and so did John. And he come back through the door. He was as pale as the character I was drawing for the alien form. And he says, listen, you ain't going to believe this. There's no cars out there. There's nobody out there. And they totally disappeared. So we were really in shock with the whole idea. And John began to get a little inquisitive because he was a policeman for that many years. And he said, look, I don't know what's going on here, but what we're going to do is we're getting out of here. We're going to take some back alleys to get down. And he says, I'm going to take you to my place. So I went to his apartment. He went every back alley he could, and nobody was behind us. And when we pulled into his driveway and got out of the car, a long black limousine pulled up, and the front window in the passenger side and the back window opened up, and two men turned their head and looked at us. They were dressed in black, and they had a driver. They rolled the windows up and drove off. We didn't know what was happening. So I called the Aerophenomenal Research Center. I explained everything that's going on. He said, it seems like you're being followed by the men in black. I said, what are they? And he says, well, we don't know a lot about that at this point, but we're going to try to explain it to you the best we can.
Okay, Johnny, we've got a break coming up here in just a few seconds. And I would hate for you to get into an explanation, then we'd have to cut you off in mid-sentence.
Sure.
So we'll pick up with the men in black when we come back on the other side of this break. Now, folks, I tell you all the time that if you miss a single second of a Kevin Smith show, you're going to miss a whole universe of information. I think you see that with tonight's show. If you missed a single second of this amazing story, you've missed a universe already. Make sure you don't miss any more universes. We'll be back right after this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Johnny, when we went away for break, you had just asked the question, what are the MIBs? And they told you we're not sure. And the microphone is yours, sir.
All right. Thank you, sir. Well, at this point, I'm real confused because I don't know anything about aliens or anything about men out of space. At that time, I was about as naive as I was when I got into the music business. So I knew what it was doing is one thing was I was out there to promote a record, and I couldn't promote a record because if I promoted a record under this kind of situation going on and I'm hitting the papers because everybody is curious about what's going on, they want to know what is true or something I'm making up to promote a record with, and I couldn't do anything. So I wanted it to go away, and I thought maybe we was getting toward the end of it here until these fellas followed us. And I contacted the Aerophenomenal Research Center, and they told me they were called Men in Black. Well, they didn't know whether they were under the government or affiliated with the aliens in some way, like shapeshifters. What do you call it?
Shapeshifters.
Shapeshifters, I'm sorry. They said it could be a possibility of the shapeshifters, and they could transform themselves into human-like people. Well, that's a little frightening and a little bit confusing to me, but anyway, I said, well, what do I do from here? And they said, just keep in touch with us if anything else strange happens. Well, the next morning, John Worth was my friend's name. his phone rung. Now, I hadn't told anybody I was at his place. And there was a man on the phone that described himself to be Dave Dunn. He said, I'm a production company out of Hollywood, California, and we're here in town, and we want to help you resolve the situation because we know that Johnny's a little upset about this, and if you let us speak to him, we think we can get to the bottom of this, and it'll be all over, and you can go about your business. So John told me what to say, and I got on the phone. Dave Dunn told me, so we have an apartment complex here in Vegas that we've moved into, and we'd like you to come over, and we'd like to discuss this matter with you. And he says, we can help you out. And I said, well, let's get to the bottom. I'll be glad to come and talk with you. So when I got over, they gave me the apartment number. I took John Worth with me again. And we went up to the apartment and knocked on the door. And this guy opened the door. He was dressed in a black turtleneck, kind of silverish black, with black pants. He invited me in. And as I come in, I could see another man standing at the bar section. And as I walked on into the room, there was another man dressed in black at a door in like another room of the apartment. But he was not coming out or not coming in. He was just kind of standing in that doorway. But I looked at the room. It was magnificent. The furniture looked like it came from England. It was beautiful, big, bulky, incredible looking furniture. The rooms was filled with it, and they had a fireplace that was really looked like hand carved, and it had a great big giant mirror over the top of it, and the mirror was all hand painted, real special design. And he invited me to sit down. He explained to me that we are interested in resolving this with you, and what we're going to do is try to guide you through some things. We're going to take you out to the desert if you'll go with us, and you can explain everything to us, and we're going to investigate this and get to the bottom, and it'll be all over with for you. I said, hey, sounds like a winner to me. And he says, but what I really want you to do is right now, he says, I think you ought to write a song about this. You're a song man. And I said, yeah, I do write songs, but right now I don't know about writing no song. I said, right now I'd rather get this over with. And he said, well, I think it would be to the best interest of everybody if you do this. And I said, well, I wouldn't even know how to write a song. He said, what happened to you? I said, well, I met them in the desert. And he said, then they start talking to you. I said, right. He said, they had no hair. He said, that's right. He says, and he said, you seen this long-shaped object, kind of shaped like sphere. And I said, well, I don't know what shape that is, but yes. He said, go home and write all this down, what I'm telling you, and we'll meet you tomorrow morning. Well, I ain't never wrote no song that quick, but I went home and tried to put together whatever I'd seen. I tried to tell it as a story. And when I got with him the next morning, I came back to the apartment, and I took a guitar with me. I said, well, this is the best I could do with this thing. So I started writing, singing the song to him. And he says, that's good, but we need some more to it. So I explained that part. And he says, you write the rest of it today if you can. And then tonight we'll listen to it again. I said, okay. He said, but at 10 o'clock tonight, we're going to the desert, out to the Blue Diamond Highway. And he said, we'll meet you at the desert in a casino. And he said, you just meet us in the front lobby, and that's where we'll be. I said, okay. So still, I'm taking John Worth with me because I just don't want to be alone with this thing. And rather than go in my car that night, I decided, let's go in your car, John, because nobody knows your car, and we'll go over there, and we'll meet them and see what these guys are all about. Well, when we got there, there was about 1,000 cars or more in that Desert Inn casino parking lot. And we had to park way away from the hotel lobby. And so I says, we'll have a tough time trying to get up there and meet these guys if we don't hurry up. So let's go. So we parked, and as we started to get out of the car, a black Cadillac limousine pulled in front of our car. And when it did, John said, look here. And this was this Dave Dunn stepping out of the car with a martini glass in his hand. And he says, hey, Johnny, here, I've brought a drink for you. And I says, how in the world did you find me? He said, because we were looking for you. And then he turned around, reached back in the car, and brought out another martini glass and says, and we also knew your friend would be with you, so here's one for him. Well, we got in the back of the Cadillac with him. There was a guy driving, dressed in black. Dave Dunn was in there, dressed in black, and a guy in the back seat, dressed in black. Well, I was a little suspicious about them having a good, cool, mixed drink already ready for us when we were supposed to meet in the lobby. So I leaned forward to talk, and when I did, I poured my drink in the floorboard. And John Worth, he seen what I done, so he leaned forward to ask the question. When he did, he poured his out. And so we sat there and wrote, and he said, just tell me when we get to this location, Johnny. I said, okay. So we rode out to Blue Diamond Road, and when we got to where the location was approximately, I said, right here. They didn't pay no attention to me. They kept going. I said, wait a minute, Dave. It was back there, the location, because this is on a wide turnaround. And he kept going. He didn't say anything. He went on for 5 or 6 miles, and when he got to this certain point, he made a U-turn in the road, just like I had done, pulled over to the side of the road, and when he did, all these lights began to shine from the other side of the road. It was, I mean, it looked like 30 people or more on the other side that these lights were. And so they told me, Dave Dunn said, we're going to get out and we're going to do a little talk here, but we'll be right back. You sit in the car. I said, okay. So they got out, him, the man in the back seat, the other guy driving. They went over in the middle of the road. And when they got in the middle of the road, you couldn't see nobody except when these figures come out of there. It was this one guy that was doing most of the talking. He stood out front, and he was dressed in black. And he began to point his finger at me in the car, and he began to say, he knows too much. We've got to end this right here, right now. It's over. Let's get it done. So he knows too much. Well, John Worth looked at me. He said, they're getting a big argument about you out there. I said, yeah, I know. I think I'm going to go out and get something straightened out here because, I ain't done anything but tell him the truth. So I started out the door on the opposite side of the driver's side, on the desert side. And as I opened the door, there was two things in the desert. It looked like, well, first I thought it was just cactus. But they kind of looked like Cousin It, if you'd ever seen the Addams Family. The one of the fuzzy-looking things, it was only looked like it was about 3 foot tall, started running toward my door on the car. Well, at first I thought I was hallucinating, but he got so close, I actually slammed the door. And I looked at John, I said, what in the world is that? He said, look like a cactus just run into the door on you. And I said, yeah, it's standing there, though, that bad thing is. And he said, well, he looked out, he says, that's fuzzy looking. And I said, yes, it is. And he said, you getting out? I said, no, I'm not getting out. So it went around the car. Then the other one stayed there. And when it went over to where these men were talking in the road, Dave Dunn and these other people. And it didn't do anything or say anything, but it came back to my car door and stayed. Well, they went on with the discussion for maybe 5 minutes, and then here come Dave Dunn, the driver, and the guy in the back seat.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll pick up right there when we come back. Folks, it's getting tight. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. we're listening to an amazing UFO encounter account by Johnny Sands. And Johnny, go ahead. I think where you left us was Cousin It was at the door of the car, and the discussion was still going on outside.
Yes. When they finally finished the conversations outside, they came back to the car. They got in, all three men. I began to ask Dave, I said, what's the problem? He wouldn't answer me. They started driving. I said, but look, is there some kind of problem? He never would speak a word. We drove all the way back to the Desert Inn. He never spoke to me. And when we got out of the car, I just got out of the car. And John looked at me. He said, these guys are really weird. And they drove off. Well, when they drove off, I told John, I said, look, something's really strange going on. Let's turn around right quick. And we hit the Blue Diamond Road. We went back out the road. Now, listen, the whole time that we were right there with them, never did a car approach us by any direction, not one direction or the other. And on the way out to where they were at, we never passed one single solitary car on the Blue Diamond Road. And when we got out to where they were at originally, nobody was there. It was completely deserted. John says, we're going home. We turned around and went back. Not one car passed us going back until we got into Vegas city limits. And then when we got in there, we went straight to the apartment. Now, I set up with John. We sat out at the swimming pool. I said, what are we going to do? He said, we need to go over in the morning, meet with this Dave Dunn, get to the bottom of whatever the world's going on here, and get this thing finalized, and just tell them we're not going to do anything with them. I said, I think I agree with you. So we got up before daylight, got dressed, got ready, and about 6 o'clock in the morning, we took off. We went straight to the apartment. I was knocking on Dave Dunn's door when a custodian come up the hall. And he says, could I help you? I said, no, that's fine. We know what we're doing. And he says, well, you're knocking on an apartment nobody lives in. I said, yes, I do, too. And John Worth turned around to him and said, oh, yes, I do, too. And he showed him. He wrote it on a piece of paper. He said, we were here yesterday and the day before to see Dave Dunn. He said, sir, I'm not trying to be smart. He said, but nobody lives there. And he said, that's reserved. And, well, he kind of made us a little mad there. So I said, look, fella, I got some serious problems, and I need to get them finalized right here, right now, and I want to see Dave Dunn. He said, sir, let me take you to the landlord. So he took us downstairs to the office, and this lady, she lived on premises, and he got her up. And she come out and says, what's the problem? I explained it to her. And she says, sir, nobody's in the apartment that you're telling us about. She said it's reserved for a couple from New York City. And so they've been on reserve, and they've paid, and nobody's there. I said, ma'am, I was in there twice. I said, I can explain it to you in detail. I said, it had furniture in it that a king would like to have. I said, it's a beautiful place, about 4 rooms. I said, it's got a living room with a hand-carved mantel, and I said, some beautiful drawings on it that was hand-painted onto the mirror over the mantel. She says, come with me, sir. So she went with us, and she got up to the door, and she stuck a key in it. She said, sir, I'm not going to dispute the fact that you haven't seen this apartment before. She said, I don't know how, but you have. She said, well, here's the strange thing. And she pushed the door open. She said, where's all that furniture you're talking about? And it was totally empty. But everything was there. John Worth says, ain't no way possible. It would have took 2 tractor and trailer trucks, and it would have took 15 men to move this stuff. Well, we wasn't satisfied. We knocked on doors after the lady let us go. We asked all the neighbors, did you see this Dave Dunn? Did you see this black Cadillac? Did you see these people? They said, we don't remember seeing any of them. We might have seen a Cadillac here maybe once before. I said, did you hear any disturbance last night? They said, oh, no, everything was quiet. And no way possible could this be. Well, I really want to get to the bottom of that. I called the Aerophenomenal Research and I explained it all. I even sung the song to them that I wrote. I said, look, ain't no way that I could have come up with all this. Ain't no way this could all have happened if it wasn't true. Now, look, this is 34 years later I'm talking to you, not Kevin. This thing was real. I have no reason to carry it on. In fact, I dropped it after so long because it was really an interference in my life. It didn't make me happy. It didn't make me no money. I kept getting these foreign spacecrafts, and I get to following, being followed by strange people, and it wasn't any fun anymore. It became a burden. The pictures I had drawn of the aliens, I burned up myself and tore them up, and the only ones was in existence was some that John Romero and Tim Green Beckley's got that he saved from the original encounter. And so I had eliminated myself from this experience altogether. Now, a lot of people standing out there being your listeners, I don't want to lead them off into some field, and I want to cut you short at this point. I don't want anybody to think I'm leading them on to something ain't real. I'm a man that believes in God. I believe in right, and I believe in wrong. And not that I've always done all of those things in that order, but I do believe that there is a power that's a supernatural power that these people are, and I believe if they really meant me harm, they would have done it that night. Have I seen them since? Yes. In their miraculous ways, they have made appointments to make me know that they were still present, and I believe those men in black to be real. I don't think they're government agents. I don't think they're anything affiliated with our government. I believe the government knows all about them, and I'd like to know it again and see them again. I think I'd have a better experience of acknowledgement of how to speak to them and find out really what the thing is. There's a heaven, there's a hell, I believe. And but you know, even in the Bible, it spoke about Solomon and Gomorrah. Angels come to warn them. When angels come, they didn't have wings. They come as human beings. They were shapeshifters, so to speak, and came as human beings. And then in Ezekiel, it speaks of a whirling craft that came to the earth. And then I found out just this year that in 1972 or 73 was the first time they ever had a telescope strong enough to even tell them what the planet Sirius, I mean the star Sirius, even existed. And but yet you can read back into the Egyptian days and even in Africa where they spoke of Sirius and they spoke of God-like, lifelike creatures coming from that to our planet. And so these were things that these two men that's supposed to be experts are telling me about the Aquarius type planet couldn't have known at that time. So,
all right, let me ask you a question now.
Sure.
In the middle of all of this, somehow Tim Beckley got involved in this. How did he get involved in this back in 1976?
Well, you know, Tim Beckley was an investigator for UFOs, very strong, and several people had told me, if you really want to get to the bottom, Tim Beckley can answer some questions. He can probably find out more than you'd ever know. And
I was just saying, Kevin, at the time I was a stringer for a couple of the tabloids, like the Inquirer, and I was always looking, plus I was putting out monthly newspaper called the UFO Review, and I was always looking for experiences. I mean, people had encounters just beyond sightings of lights in the sky and things like that. I was always looking for the noise, for the chatter, not just the mundane objects that people had seen wandering across the sky or something like that. And I was very impressed by Johnny's story. Because not only did I find him a credible witness, but there were other individuals as well who had reported sightings the day before as well as that night. In fact, I remember I had compiled quite a file at the time. I written this up for my book, The UFO Silencers, which is about the Men in Black. I guess maybe that's the aspect of the story that intrigued me so much. But, you know, I talked to some of the other witnesses who didn't know, of course, Johnny at all, and he didn't know them. And they had seen similar objects in the sky around that same period and around that area. Of course, Las Vegas is kind of that area near the desert outside of Vegas is well known for UFO encounters and experiences. Many people, while driving across the desert there, especially at night, have seen weird objects in the sky, and some of them have come down very low.
This was before a lot of the activity at Area 51, which isn't that far away, of course, but this was much closer to town. And also the fact that Johnny had passed a lie detector test and excuse me, had impressed me very much.
All right. So you got involved as a journalist or an investigative reporter at that time. And you had the sketches based on the illustrations based on his description of these beings. Had you ever seen sketches or illustrations of beings that looked like that?
Well, you know, Kevin, UFO occupants come in so many different shapes and sizes and descriptions that that's kind of what impressed me. It wasn't something that it wasn't the typical gray that we see today. No, it was something rather unique, I would have to say. And in fact, I was kind of worried when we were asked to do this episode of UFO Hunters for the History Channel that'll be airing in a couple of weeks. I was afraid that Johnny would be upset with me because he had sent me the original painting that these artists in the hotel lobby had done so that I could take it on tour with me. I was doing some lectures at the time, and I had gone into a newspaper office. I forget whether it was Syracuse or Rochester, New York, and they were so impressed by the painting, they wanted to use it along with an interview with me on the front page of the newspaper, but they wanted to hold it overnight, and they said they would send the painting back to me. Well, they didn't. I never got the painting back, and when I saw Johnny a month or so ago while we were videotaping this episode of UFO Hunters, I had to reintroduce myself to him, and I said, I have to apologize. You never got that painting back. Luckily, I did have a copy, which is in the book UFO Silencers that I wrote back in the 90s and still available on Amazon. But I was intrigued by his story, but I was also impressed because he had passed the lie detector test, and there were other credible witnesses who had seen strange objects in the sky that could not be explained. In fact, if I recall, Kevin, the object or one of the objects that were seen during a two- or three-night period there around Vegas was also picked up on radar. I remember speaking to someone at the time with one of the local airports or something there who had admitted that they had picked up something strange that they couldn't explain.
You know, the radar system being used in commercial aviation now is specifically designed to not show any UFOs.
Is that correct?
Yeah. According to John Callahan, who designed the system, he oversaw the design of the system. And he told us here on the show that, they installed this system back the time when Reagan let all of the air traffic controllers go that went on strike, and they installed this system. What happens is it will identify that as a weather anomaly and dump it into a side file on the system. So it records it, but it never will show up on the air traffic controller screen.
Well, that explains this incident in O'Hare Airport in Chicago a couple of years ago where I think some 50 to 75 witnesses saw this thing in the sky, but they claimed nothing was ever picked up on radar, which the witnesses found very difficult to believe.
Well, he explained, we went into that when he was on the show, and he said military radar will still pick it up. And the radar being used by air traffic controllers picks it up, but the software doesn't allow it on their screen. It dumps it into a side file and identifies it as a weather anomaly.
Huh.
That's weird.
Well, it kind of tells you that they know something's up, and they don't want the air traffic controllers to be able to say, yeah, we saw it.
Yes,
but back then in 1976, they could. And one of the interesting things, though, is that if a UFO happens to fly through an area where there is weather radar, you know, like at your local TV station, it may pick it up. Yeah, the weather radar may pick it up, but air traffic controllers will never see it.
Well, of course, though, UFOs also have a cloaking device, because even back in the old days when this may not have been the case, there were a lot of incidents where both the pilots and those in the radar tower at the airport would see these anomalies in the sky, and radar would not pick them up.
Mm-hmm.
So they do have a cloaking device of some sort. Of course, we're dealing with phantoms of the air. I mean, these things are, I believe that some of them could be extraterrestrial, I think that there's something beyond this. There's more magic involved than we could even imagine, I believe.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that some of these things, well, first of all, when we say UFO, what are we really talking about? We're talking about an unidentified object. So people see these things and they describe them in different circumstances, and they describe them under different visionary conditions. I think that UFOs are a multitude of things. Some of them could be coming here from other planets. Others of them could be an environmental phenomenon. But I'm not talking about a freak of nature. I'm talking about something that is under some form of intelligence. You know, I've had witnesses who have seen these objects on the ground, and they would approach these objects, the feeling that they get, maybe they're within 15 or 20 feet. They could approach these objects, they try to get closer, and all of a sudden the object will dematerialize in front of their eyes, and yet if they turn around, it'll be in back of them the same distance away. These things, some of them seem to be a natural phenomenon of some type. They are earthbound. I don't know whether they're spirits or time travelers are a part of the Earth's atmospheric environment, but I think that there's something more magical here than just being some other planet. Because here Johnny Sands is telling the story about how they are concerned about our use of nuclear weapons and nuclear power, and that we could destroy the Earth. Well, if they were coming from a solar system or a light years away, why would they be that concerned about it? It would seem to me that most of the messages that they leave are something that would be of bigger concern if they were right here alongside of us, perhaps living in some sort of invisible world.
Well, that makes... there are some rational connections there, and from which you could connect the dots. Yeah. Listen, here's something I would like for us to do. Johnny, this song that you wrote, is it the one you sent me?
Yes, it is. And listen, before you ever think about playing it, these men in black helped me write that. Now, Kevin, I know you got skeptical people out there that's listening to this broadcast. And I've waited 34 years to even think about telling this story anymore or releasing this song. And I'm 64, be 64 on my birthday. Like I told you, I don't have any reason to exaggerate. I'm not trying to promote anything in any special way. But this song was written with them and me. And you know, if there's any skepticism whatsoever out there, there's never been a polygraph test done on me for the men in black, about the fuzzy creatures, about the Dave Dunn, about these people disappearing. I would be more than happy if anybody wants to set up a challenge to go ahead, and I will do a polygraph test to verify 100% of this to be 100% true, that it's not a fluke, it's not a hoax, and it's not a promotional gimmick. It is 100% the truth of what I've told you here on this show tonight.
All right. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and cue this song up. And this is the song that was written by Johnny Sands with some assistance from the Men in Black back in 1976.
It was late at night and I was speeding along in the desert Nevada, and I was all alone, kind of tired and hungry, and I was Vegas bound, when out of the sky came a light with no sound. Well, it's a bright colored thing, sort of shaped like spheres. Said, look here, John, time to get out of here. And wouldn't you know it, it's just my luck that my car stalled and left me stuck. I got right out to see what I could do. I was shaking so bad I could hardly move. Framed my headlights, I saw my coming. Something made me frozen, keep me from running. I see two creatures all of pale and white. Two strange figures in on my front headlights. Heads were shiny, see they had no hair. Where they come from, they said, way up there. I gotta move, but something got me frozen, I can't run. Oh, yeah. Hey, won't leave. Them aliens, they're shaking me up, son. Oh, no. I gotta move. Lord, I was back down south. They asked a few more questions and said, what should we do? I said, just unfreeze me and I'll be leaving you. I gotta move, but something got me froze where I can't run. Oh, yeah. Hey, I wanna leave. They got some kind of spell on me and I can't get on. They said they're gonna come back here and see me again. Now I don't know if what they're saying is true, but I'm gonna keep on looking up. I think that you should too. They're on the move, so you better keep looking up, cause they might come. Ooh, yeah. They're on the move, and they're faster than a bullet wing. Look out, they're coming. They're on the move.
Look out.
No need to run. They're on the move.
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 Alright folks, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guests this evening, Tim Beckley and Johnny Sands. Tim, when you first came across this story, you're doing, I guess we would call it investigative reporting. You first come across this story, you've got little tidbits of the story. What was your first impression when you heard this?
Well, you know, also, too, I guess what kind of impressed me is at that period, there were not a lot of stories that were appearing in the daily press about UFOs. I mean, there were some, and of course there had been the big flaps of 75 and so forth. But there hadn't been anything in the press for a while. And then somehow I got a hold of a copy of the Las Vegas Sun, and there is the Johnny Sands story in there. So that was one of the things that impressed me. And then at that time,
now let me ask: did that article,
yes,
did that article in the Las Vegas Sun talk about the polygraph tests?
Well, I remember that I can't say for certain. That's been a long time since I read the article. But I do remember that other people were mentioned as having verified the story. And I did, track down as many people as I could. And I'd have to go back and see if I could find my original files and notes on that to be sure. But I do know over the course of investigating maybe a 4 or 5 month period that I did talk to people who had were involved in the polygraph test. I believe, Johnny, wasn't that an individual who was associated with the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization?
Yes, it was. It was Ariel Nolan was the polygraph examiner. He had been with the FBI for 30 years. And Dr. Leo Sprinkle, of course, he was with the University of Wyoming. And
well,
then
sure,
the
I know. I know Dr. Sprinkle very well. I've even lectured at the university out there when he was very active and engaged in his research. He's kind of like semi-retired now, although he's still writing books and collecting material. So I don't know. I guess it was just the overall vibe or the overall feeling from the case. And there aren't really very many incidences like this. I mean, people can tell a story, evidential proof or extra evidence certainly goes a long way in this, field. When you have witnesses who are willing to collaborate a story or someone who is administer a lie detector or polygraph, test, and an organization like APRO, which is a very no-nonsense group at the time. I mean, if they investigated something and gave their, okay, then it had to be pretty much, valid. So I remember the incident, and I guess also too, the uniqueness of the of what this supposed alien looked like. And you're right about that. Kevin, there's something very captivating about the image.
Sometime, I don't know if it was the late 70s or the early 80s, but a TV series came out about Aquaman. Remember that? And Patrick Duffy was in it. He looked human, but he always had to return to the water in order to survive. He had to return to the water, had little gills on the side of his neck. And I'm could be wrong about the timing of this, but I think it would have been shortly after this encounter and after this story broke. You may remember Patrick, I think it's Patrick Duffy is his name, was also in Dallas, in the TV series Dallas. And he was JR's younger brother. Well, he was in this series that was on television, Aquaman. And I wonder if perhaps this story sort of gave them the idea that they developed into that series.
Also too, it could work the other way around. I do believe that Johnny mentioned earlier about how some of these beings could be have the ability to shape shift.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if they don't take on images that we find very familiar, like in 1917. Of course, there was the visions of Fatima, and the witnesses to that, these children, were all very devout Catholics, and they saw the vision of the Virgin Mary, because that was something that they could very easily relate to. And if you go back and actually read their testimony and the testimony of I guess 50,000 witnesses who saw this phenomena in the sky, you'll see that there is a great correlation between the appearance of the Virgin Mary out of a cloud and the sun coming closer to the earth and drying up the ground because it had been raining all day long and so forth. Very, very similar to a dramatic UFO encounter or experience. So I think that these abilities, these beings do have the ability to transform themselves into physical form so that we don't find them very frightening. They can almost be just taken as something that we haven't experienced with or can relate to.
Yeah, and the you know, there's even some theories about the mechanics of that or the technology of that. One theory that I found pretty intriguing is that they don't actually literally shapeshift, but they cause your mind to do the shapeshifting. They cause your mind to see, you know, what it is you want to see. Right. And I find that one pretty interesting.
Well, you know, it's also been theorized that maybe they're not really even here, that in a lot of these episodes, they could actually be just holograms or projections from their planet or their spaceship hovering above the Earth or from some other dimension.
Yeah, but, you know, there are little tidbits of testimony that tell me they are really here. For instance, in Johnny's testimony, he talks about one of them sort of pats him on the shoulder or touches him on the shoulder.
Right.
So the hologram could reach out and look like he's touching you, but you wouldn't feel that.
Well, maybe the in your mind.
And let me say this, and not to interrupt you. Look, they were there. This was the most incredible. If I could ever go through any experience in my whole lifetime, and I've done some pretty incredible things. Working for Elvis Presley was one of the greatest opportunities I ever had in my life, being a stuntman in his movies. But look, I knew what I was doing. I know what I was seeing, even though he didn't look like he might be real to me. This was the most incredible experience I've ever had in my life. And to share it was, back then, I didn't really want to share it. But now that it's been said and done, I'm excited that it happened. And my wife calls me a fanatic about it because I go out every night and look up at the sky. And sometimes I even talk to the sky and ask them, would you come down and visit me again? Because I really would like to see it all over one more time. And
So you view this as a positive experience in your life?
Oh, yes. I mean, they didn't threaten me or make anything that made me fear them. It was, I mean, at the time, yes, for years, I wanted to keep it muffled. And look, I'm not selling records now. That record you just heard, I'm giving that record away. I'm giving you that record, a copy of the story in my own words with all the secrets that I held back for 34 years, and the 8 to 10 glossy picture of the alien, free of charge. All you got to do is pay me the shipping and handling. And I'm promoting that because I'd like for every UFO collector that really likes UFOs to have a copy. They can go through your network and link to me, or they can get me on www.myspace.com/Johnny Sands Music. And I just want everybody to have a piece of it and to feel the experience that I felt. And these creatures, yes, they looked human, but at the same time, they look like people with lots of knowledge and lots of wisdom. They spoke like people with knowledge and lots of wisdom. And I believe, like Tim, I don't know if it's from underneath the sea, on top of the world, or where they're from. But, you know, it's people like Tim that gave me enthusiasm and helped me go on. And I wouldn't even went on UFO hunters if it hadn't been for Tim, because Tim has wrote on about me, gave me books that helped me remember that experience and appreciate it.
Well, he also is responsible for bringing you on this show.
Oh, yes, he is. Right. I mean...
And you know, Kevin, we're lucky because I was at first told that he was deceased. When I suggested to the producers of UFO Hunters that they try to locate him, because I hadn't spoken to him since 1976, they got back to me in a couple of days and they said, "Oh, we just found out he passed away like 3-4 years ago." And then I was talking to my friend Zamora, the Torture King. Who lives out in Las Vegas. He was doing a show out here in Coney Island. You know, he eats glass and sleeps on a bed of nails and so forth, you know. And I happened to mention, because he's interested in, you know, UFOs and the Shaver mystery and the inner earth and all that stuff. And I said, geez, I really wanted to get this guy Johnny Sands. He says, I know Johnny Sands. I just wrote him up for my book, Weird Las Vegas. He's not dead. So they finally managed to track him down through MySpace, and so he's here with us tonight. And this is the first, since the UFO Hunters episode hasn't aired yet, this is the first time he has told his experience, as far as I know, in public since 1976, and I just couldn't let this opportunity to go by.
Hey, well, and I'm very glad that you got him to be with us tonight, and I'm glad that this is the first time that this story has been told since the UFO Hunters episode has not yet aired. This is the first time this has been told for 34 years. And a whole world is listening. And I got people in 95 countries listening to this tonight. And I'm glad they got the opportunity to hear this. Now, I got a couple of more questions I want to get to here pretty quick before we run out of time tonight. Now, Johnny, you said that this is a very positive experience for you. And yet you described something for us when you were talking about the encounter with this Dave Dunn and these men in black in their limousine, their Cadillac black Cadillac limousine. That was, I would think, pretty negative. And that is, this Dave Dunn drives you out to the middle of the desert and has a conversation with someone unknown out there where he's saying, these guys already know too much, it's gone too far, we need to get rid of them. When we come back from this break, I'd like for you to tell me why that's a positive experience, and if it's not a positive experience, who are these men in black? We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. One real quick reminder. If you have not yet subscribed to our free weekly newsletter, where's the genius in that? You need to go over to kevinsmithshow.com, subscribe to K-Files E-Zine, and then you'll be in the know instead of in the dark. All right, very quickly, let's go back to our guest this evening, Johnny Sands. I've got a question for you, and the question is, wasn't this episode with these men in black pretty negative? And if it's negative, then who are these guys?
Well, Kevin, I want to be as honest as I can. At the time when it was all said and done there and they disappeared on me, yes, it was very negative. And that's why I shut it down in my mind and tried to shut it down with people around me. But as I've thought about it over the years, number one, he brought me into his apartment there where it was supposed to be what he was supposed to be, but it wasn't what he's supposed to be. But he gave me the song. I didn't realize at the time. I told people, I sung a song a couple of times to people. They said, "Wow, that's a weird song. That's a weird experience. Why don't you record it?" I said, "No, I don't want to capitalize on anything like that, because I'm really not too sure what the meaning was." And they said they'd see me again. They didn't fight me in that desert. The argument, I don't know what they meant about that argument, but I tried to collect in my mind what the thoughts of it was. I don't know what they meant about it. I knew too much. But, you know, maybe I did know too much. Maybe I felt like what it meant was I had actually had that real experience. They knew that I'd been in contact. And maybe they were governing the transactions that was going on between what I was going to do forward or what I might do and what was going on with what Dave Dunn and them had in mind of me doing. And
all right, now, Dave Dunn, let's talk about Dave Dunn. You described these aliens to an artist, and he sketched a picture of the aliens. What about Dave Dunn? Do we have a sketch of him?
Yes, we do. UFO Hunters had a special investigator for, I believe it was Baltimore, Maryland Police Department. Is that right, Tim?
Yeah. So he's a forensic artist, and they flew him out to Arizona. We photographed a part of the episode near the Grand Canyon,
And they brought this forensic artist out, and Johnny sat there with him for about an hour or so, and they recreated an artistic sketch of what one of this gentleman looked like, which will be on the program.
Okay, now Johnny, has anybody? And well, let me ask this to Tim as well. Do you know if anyone has tried to track down a Dave Dunn who was in the music production business in California during that period of time?
Yeah, go ahead, Johnny. You can handle this. Well, I do know that somebody emailed me recently. There's an investigator by the name of Gibby that I'm in touch with, and she had tried to track this down. And apparently there was a production company with that name, but the website is no longer in existence, and the phone company doesn't have any information. On this particular.
So they vanished just like all the furnishings in the apartment.
They did, yes
indeed,
as far as we know.
And the police officer that worked with me from Philadelphia immediately tried to do that same kind of investigation on them, and he could not locate or get any information. And believe me, for 34 years since I got familiar with the Internet, I have worked diligently to try to find or rescue anything that would bring me to the point of facts about this man. And I can't find anything that even gets me close to the real factor that he ever existed. It's an extraordinary thing, and I know it's a little extraordinary for a lot of people listening to you. And I appreciate you letting us have this opportunity. I appreciate Tim Beckley here for giving me the opportunity. I appreciate him believing in me this much, and I just want people to be a little bit more experienced and believe that, hey, we're not alone in this world, and there's something out there, and it's something important enough to keep looking up and watching out for.
All right, now people,
Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin, also too, if listeners want to keep up with the activities, Johnny's activities, and what we're doing, we offer a free subscription to both our online and mail order publications, Bizarre Bazaar and Conspiracy Journal. All they have to do is either go to conspiracyjournal.com and sign up there, or they can drop me an email at MrUFO8@hotmail.com, and we'll be happy to put them on their mailing list, and they can keep up with all our activities and our book publishing and our DVDs that we produce and so forth.
All right, and to keep up with Johnny, or to get this photograph, or the 8x10, as well as the written story and a copy of the song. They have to pay the shipping, but other than that, there's no cost, and they can get in touch with you at myspace.com/Johnny Sands Music, right?
Yes, they'll see the alien, they'll see my orbit in space, and listen, I'd like to invite you, Kevin, to come over and join me on that space, and so I can keep up with your program on a continuous basis. It's a real honor. You got a good show and got a good listening audience, and I want them all to be invited to ask me any questions. They can email me, come over and be my friends, but we want them to keep in correspondence and want you to, and we thank you for the honor and the opportunity.
Well, I can tell you it's been my pleasure, and it is, I can say for the audience, our pleasure to get to hear this very, very unique encounter that you haven't talked about for 34 years. And do you have any idea when the UFO Hunters episode is going to be on?
Yeah, it's a couple of weeks away now. I just heard from the producer of the program, and they're just finishing up the editing. They do get it on the air real quick. Now, the name of the show, this particular episode, is called The Silencers. And the book that I did a couple of years ago, or back in the 90s, but it's been brought up to date, is called The UFO Silencers, Mysteries of the Men in Black. So this particular episode is all about the Men in Black. And not only was Johnny on it, but I told about my experience. And I have what I believe is the only authentic photograph of a real MIB that I
Men in Black.
Took in Jersey City
back in the 60s.
Okay, now that photograph is in your book?
It's in the book UFO Silencers, which you can get on Amazon.com or from conspiracyjournal.com, and the photograph will be on the show. It's part of the program.
All right. Well, that's something we'll all be looking forward to. And,
this will be probably the next to the last episode of this season, and we're sending around a petition to try to get the History Channel to renew the program for a fourth year.
Well, I would think if the History Channel just looks at the numbers, they would have to renew it.
Well, they did see it. They just did, Tim.
Yes.
They just renewed it.
Oh, well, that's good.
They did renew it? Oh, well, that's good. That's good news.
Yes.
Yeah, well, let's play some applause for the History Channel.
Yeah.
And thank you to Tim Green Beckley for that, too, because he really, man, he was behind it all.
Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you for being on the show with me tonight. And if you will, just stay on the line for a few minutes as we close the show. Just actually about a minute and a half here as we close the show. And then I want to speak with you personally after the show for just a minute or two. So just stay on the line with me. Again, thank you for being with us. Fascinating information.
Thank you, Kevin Smith.
All right. All right, folks. Like I say, you miss a single second, you miss a universe of information. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.